From beanies to carry bags and from shoes to caps, browse our shop now at tntradio.live. You're with Bruce DeTorres and World Stage on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
This year, 2023, is the 60th anniversary of John F. Kennedy's last year in office as president, 1963. His life and his career are a blazing example of courage. That man willed himself into the position that he reached, dragging, pushing a frail, pain-ridden body every step of the way, projecting to himself first the image that he had of himself and the rest of the world as well. And with us is my friend Steve Cameron, who is a writer, producer, and book publisher from LA in California. And he's worked both in behind and in front of the camera for over 25 years. Steve began his career covering news and sports from his hometown of Detroit, Michigan, where he also worked on many local independent film and television productions. In 2019, Steve authored his first book about the JFK assassination called The Deputy Interviews, about not only the assassination, but also the investigation of Roger Dean Craig, a heroic Dallas deputy sheriff who exposed a vast government conspiracy to kill President Kennedy. Steve is currently working on a new project about the assassination, which will revolutionize how the public will view exactly what happened in Dallas on November 22nd, 1963. You can find Steve's work at his website, stevecameronproductions.com. Steve, thanks for coming on. How are you today?
Hello, Bruce DeTorres, one of my favorite people on this planet that we call Earth. Thank you for such a wonderful introduction, and thank you so much for having me on as your guest today.
Well, my pleasure, and I feel the same about you. You were one of the first to really encourage me when my book came out a couple years ago, and you referred me to, I think it was Lorian Fenton, for what became my first presentation at a JFK conference, a Zoom conference, a virtual conference, and I will never forget that. Yeah, I've picked up courage as a theme today, Steve, because you and JFK and Roger Dean Craig embody it in such a major way. We've got three segments that we can use. I thought first I'd like to talk about you and your story, your career, and how you discovered either Roger Craig's story first or the Kennedy assassination, and then by the end we'll talk maybe about the world today and current events, kind of in that chronological order. So if that's all right, what hooked you first? Was it Roger Craig's story, or was it something else about the Kennedy assassination?
Well, originally it was probably the presidency of John F. Kennedy, and growing up and admiring that man and learning about all the things that he did during the 1960s and leading up all the way up until his assassination. If it's okay with you, Bruce, I'd like to read a quote from President Kennedy that many Americans may have never heard before. He gave this to his press corps during his first term, and it goes like this. "We are not afraid to entrust the American people with unpleasant facts, foreign ideas, alien philosophies, and competitive values. For a nation that is afraid to let its people judge the truth and falsehood in an open market is a nation that is afraid of its people." And I don't think any words have ever been spoken that sum up not only what was going on in the 1960s, but all the way until today. The censorship that is taking place in an open and free market.
Yeah. Yeah. You reminded me with great excitement the discovery, the comprehension of what his presidency was all about, what he stood for. And more than that, to discover what America was back then. Never perfect, but compared to the clown act that passes for statesmanship, that passes for political intelligence these days, it's enough to enrage someone. If someone just discovered and read a book, a good book about Kennedy's administration, and thought, my goodness, you know, it was not that long ago. You know, the older you get, the closer 60 years ago really becomes. And that's just a couple turns of a couple pages. You know, if each page is 20 years, that's just 3 pages back, you know? And to see where we've come and how it's obviously, when you read some history, you read some real honest history, how it's intentional. We've been constrained. We've been limited. We've been impoverished. I don't know how old you are. You don't have to tell me, but do you have a conscious memory of Kennedy's administration? I don't think so.
I'm on the wrong side of 40. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, but you don't remember. You weren't conscious during his administration, were you?
No. I probably around the year 1983, 84, when I wrote my first book report on President Kennedy's life. And all through school, if it's okay, I'll jump to what I was taught about his assassination. And the official story, basically growing up, and I'm sure many other people can relate to this, and it's still going on to this day, that it was one lone nut shooter named Lee Harvey Oswald, and the Warren Commission solved the case and put it to bed, and that's the end of the story. Well, I believe that up until probably the year 1990, when I first saw a documentary called The Men Who Killed Kennedy. I believe it was originally a British documentary, and then it aired on the History Channel, and I was watching it on, you know, just sitting there in shock with my mouth open. I couldn't believe what they were talking about, because I had never heard any of these things, these so-called conspiracy theories.
It's a great series.
Yes. And I was sitting there, and I was living with my parents at the time still. I was probably about a senior in high school, and I remember watching it, and then I remember my father walking into the room, and he just kind of stood over my shoulder, and he was watching it with me. And we both sat there in silence. And then he finally turned to me, and he said, "Turn that crap off." And I couldn't understand why. I was like, "What's wrong, Dad? And I could tell he was visibly upset, and he was even more upset that I was watching it. And he said to me, "I'll never believe that my government had anything to do with that." And then he stormed out of the room. And I thought I did something wrong. You know, I didn't know what I did wrong. But as the years have gone by, and you know, a lot of people.
Within a year or two, right after that, Oliver Stone's movie. Sorry.
Yeah. 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 No. Yeah. He was confronted with that. That harsh truth, and maybe he just didn't want me to hear that, and didn't want me to lose faith in my government.
And then when did you kind of wake up to, or did you just, did it make no, like you watched that series, you watched maybe all the episodes, some of the episodes, The Men Who Killed Kennedy.
Yes, eventually,
did it do
yes.
anything to you? Did it change the trajectory of your thinking about it or your interest in it?
Well, I didn't jump out of a window or anything, you know. It didn't cause me to, want to end it all or whatever. Because,
but it persuaded you.
It made me want to learn more. You know, it made me want to learn more. Right. And then I saw the Oliver Stone film JFK, and that was a whole nother aspect of the Kennedy assassination that I had never heard really before, about the Cubans and the what was going on with David Ferry and his connections with Oswald, and The whole scene down there in Dallas or in New Orleans. So that movie and the Kennedy documentary, The Men Who Killed Kennedy, really opened my eyes. And then kind of,
what did it make, did the assassination
the
become?
I'm on.
It did. So from that point on, it was a topic you very intentionally studied with great interest, or was it just a casual reflection still?
Yeah, it was a casual reflection. I felt that there wasn't much I could do about it. I just thought at the time, especially when the film JFK came out, it was pretty much everywhere, and it was pretty much common knowledge, it seemed like, you know, especially like between people that I knew, my friends, people that I would talk to. It was pretty common knowledge that, there was definitely something more going on in Dallas in November 22nd, 1963 than what we've all been led to believe in our history books.
When did you determine or decide or that you needed to dig into Roger Craig's story? When did you discover that story, and what was your process of becoming so interested in it that you are the most passionate spokesperson for his story?
Yeah, I came to Roger Craig's story via a documentary called Evidence of Revision. Now, this was a documentary that I stumbled upon in 2012. And I was actually, somebody close to me had died under suspicious circumstances, and it was ruled a suicide, but there were some very suspicious circumstances. And so I started investigating suspicious suicides and online and learning what I could about them. And I came across that documentary Evidence of Revision, and it featured a Dallas deputy sheriff named Roger Dean Craig, and he was a decorated deputy in the state of Texas. He won in 1960, he won the Officer of the Year award. It was during his first year in the field as a deputy sheriff, and he won that award at the age of 25, I believe, and he was the youngest person to ever win that award in the state of Texas. He
straightforward
died.
Very, very honorable. Yeah. Member of the sheriff's office. Go ahead.
Yes.
He died how?
He died in 1975 on I believe it was May 15th, 1975. He was found laying in the middle of the room, long ways on the floor, with a 22 rifle laying long ways on the bed, several feet away from him. And his death was ruled a suicide, and the cause of death was that the bullet traveled down from the rifle was supposedly, the story goes, the way they put this together was that he was holding the rifle kind of above his head, pointing down on top of his right clavicle, and pulled the trigger, and the bullet didn't hit any vital organs. It traveled down through the top of his chest and exited out the back right of his back, and he bled out. It basically, the bullet had severed an artery, and that was the cause of death, and he bled out, and then they ruled that suicide.
I want to read you a quote about courage, and then we're gonna go to a break, and then I'm gonna ask you to pick up the story of how his life changed with the whole country's on November 22nd. This is what Eleanor Roosevelt said about courage. You gain strength, courage, and confidence by every experience in which you really stop to look fear in the face. You are able to say to yourself, I have lived through this horror. I can take the next thing that comes along. You must do the thing that you think you cannot. And Steve, I'm circling courage because what you post that gets you banished from Facebook over and over and over again is nothing less than a very admirable, stubborn determination. This is, we're going to take a break. We're talking with Steve Cameron, And this is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Hervé Morich.
Tedros, the terrorist, over at the World Horrific Organization and their emergency committee met to consider whether COVID-1984, 9/11, remains a public health emergency of international concern. And in their view, the outbreak remains a global health emergency. And Tedros agrees. These people are insane. They're not going to let it go. They're not going to stop. The sooner everyone gets this through their thick skulls, the sooner we can take steps to break free from this global tyranny. These people are nuts. You know, and there were some interesting comments as well. Dr. Kat Lindley said this is another form of psychological operations. Keep the emergency declaration going so we can approve endless stream of revenue for Big Pharma, all while letting our governments dictate our way of life.
Hervé Morich on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
A better business tip from TNT Radio. News Talk Radio listeners are some of the most active and involved listeners of any format. TNT Radio listeners rely on TNT Radio often as their primary source of information. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
A cashless society means zero cash. No tipping the waiter or hairdresser. No giving to busking musicians. No selling unwanted items for cash. No buying anything with privacy. Digital currency means every cent you receive will be recorded and every transaction tracked. Lighting the fuse for freedom. TNT Radio.
Steve, you posted this on Facebook about 3 years ago. I woke up this morning to this most beautiful and touching review on Amazon left by Roger Dean Craig's granddaughter for my new book, The Deputy Interviews by Steve Cameron, about the heroic Dallas deputy sheriff who witnessed the assassination of President Kennedy and died trying to expose the truth about the conspiracy that took place on November 22nd. This is what his granddaughter apparently left on Amazon. Her name is Nita Edwards. I felt you reading it with me. That's her title. She wrote, I cannot express enough the dignity and respect that was shown to my grandfather in this book. My family is so blessed to have someone show the world who my grandfather truly was. The chance to know a family member is something to be cherished. And when that is taken from you, there are no words that can fill the void in your heart. The words in this book introduced me to the soul of my grandfather to such a degree that I felt as if he was reading it with me. So that's the impact of your book telling, or letting Roger tell his story. Give us the who, what, where, when, and why of what Roger experienced on November 22nd and what that led to through the years for him, please.
Sure. Thank you so much for reading that review that Nita left. That's Roger Craig's granddaughter. She's an incredible woman, along with her family, the entire Craig family. It's just amazing the support that they gave me during the journey that I went on when I was investigating his murder. I believe he was murdered. And honestly, I believe the story would have stopped if they didn't give me the amount of support that they gave me during my investigation. And they really wanted answers. And still to this day, they are still seeking answers. But I'm just honored to be able to help his family find those answers. Roger Craig, he was born in 1936. I'll give you the short version. He was born in 1936. And at the age of 13, he ran away from home. He had a bad life growing up in the state of Wisconsin. And he ran away from home. He hopped on a train. I believe he took a train to Montana, began working on ranches. And then at the age of 15, he decided he wanted to join the army, but he was too young to join. During this time, the Korean War was happening. And so he used his older brother's name, Donald, who was 18 at the time, to enlist. And during his time as a soldier and at the age of 15, both him and his brother were called into their superior's office because they caught him. They had two Donalds, two Donald Craigs in the army.
Steve, would you indulge me just because I kind of know some things I want to get into our time together here. Would you mind picking up the story of his life on the day of the assassination?
Sure. Yeah. So yeah, he served in Korea and then he moved to Dallas. And he became a sheriff's deputy. And his first year in the field, he got the Officer of the Year award. And then 2 years later, on November 22nd, 1963, President Kennedy came to Dallas. And Roger Craig was representing the sheriff's office. And him and all the other deputies were standing outside of the sheriff's office in Dealey Plaza on the corner of Houston and Main Street is where the courthouse was there. And Bill Decker told all of his deputies that they are not to take any part in the security of the president's motorcade and to just stand outside in plain clothes representing the sheriff's office. Roger Craig watched the president's motorcade drive by him and made a right turn onto Houston, and then made that fatal turn onto Elm Street. And Roger Craig heard the first shot ring out, and then he began running towards the limousine, and he heard the additional shots ring out. And then by the time he got to where the limousine was when President Kennedy was struck by the fatal shot that hit him in the head, the limousine had gone under the triple underpass and headed towards Parkland Hospital. Roger Craig immediately saw a Dallas police officer drop his motorcycle and run up to the picket fence area near the top of the grassy knoll and run behind the fence. Roger Craig followed him, went to the behind this fenced in area near the railroad tracks. There was a parking lot that was reserved for sheriff deputies and people that worked at the courthouse. And as soon as Roger Craig got into the parking lot, he saw a woman driving a brown Chevy, and she was trying to exit this parking lot. Now, this parking lot had a locking gate on it, and it was the deputies had a key for it, and they paid a monthly fee to stay in this parking lot. And he did not recognize this woman. He stopped her, pulled out his badge, and said, "You're under arrest. You're not going anywhere." She said, "I have to go." He stopped her, and another deputy by the name of Lummy Lewis came over and said that he would take her over to the sheriff's office and detain her and get all of her information. He turned her, Roger Craig turned her over to Lewis, and then Craig began to investigate where people were gathered along the picket fence, and they said that they heard shots coming from that area. He was at that point confronted by Mr. and Mrs. Arnold Rowland. And they told Roger Craig, they said they arrived in Dealey Plaza approximately 15 minutes before the president's motorcade drove through, and they noticed two men on the sixth floor of the school book depository walking and pacing back and forth in the windows with rifles. Roger Craig took their information, and then at that point, he saw one of his fellow deputies investigating the curb area on the south side of Elm Street. And he went over there to see what they were investigating. And they were investigating where possible bullets had struck the curb or anywhere else near that area. And they were investigating. Yes.
I just want to recount what you've shared so far that are huge areas of investigation or anomalies to the official story, as I have been holding them in my memory. And then you're going to pick up right where you are with the markings on the south side of Elm Street.
Sure.
The parking lot behind the picket fence of such concern where shots came from that the Warren Commission justified, no shots came from there, was reserved for use for the Dallas County sheriffs. So right there, if there was a conspiracy and they could have controlled and let in assassins, the sheriff's department would have needed an unbelievable amount of scrutiny. And then for a woman not that he doesn't recognize to be trying to leave right then the Arnolds who told him they saw two people up on the sixth floor. The official story says just one, little old Lee Harvey Oswald. Okay. And then the markings pick it up right there, because I think he saw someone retrieve a bullet. And don't rush through it, but I like how you're telling it. This happened and this happened and this happened. Don't rush, but if you don't mind, pick up right there and then we'll dissect it like this.
Yeah, sure. And it, real quick, if anybody wants to get the full story from straight from Roger Craig, he wrote a manuscript in 1971 called When They Kill a President. And that is available for people to find this information. That's how I found out this information about the parking lot. Roger Craig said it was very suspicious to him, and that's why he did arrest the woman, because it was a secured lot. And it was also secured on the day of the president's arriving to Dallas. And there were railroad workers that testified to this, and police officers that testified to this, that lot was secured and nobody was to be entering it or leaving it. And so, so after Roger Craig talked to the Rowlands, see, the Rowlands, they thought that it was the part of the president's security detail up on that sixth floor. That's why they weren't too surprised by it. But then after the shots happened, that's when they decided to report it. And then after Roger Craig spoke to the Rowlands, he saw his fellow deputy sheriff, Deputy Buddy Walters, investigating a curb. And he walked over there across the street on the south side of Elm Street, and they were looking, and they saw where a bullet had hit the, there was a manhole cover. It was identified by Officer J.W. Foster, who reported that a bullet had struck the concrete covering of a manhole cover on the south side of Elm Street. The bullet mark is still there to this day. And why this is so important, these are bullets that were not, these were not in the Warren Commission in the final report.
Right.
So these are additional bullets. So these additional bullets I'm going to tell you about that hit the grass area and hit the manhole cover and also hit another curb on the on Main Street. This disproves the magic bullet theory, where the Warren Commission said that only three bullets were shot from Lee Harvey Oswald's rifle. And because in the so-called sniper's nest, there were only three shells found. Right. So only three shells only three shots supposedly were taken. Roger Craig, while investigating the curb with Buddy Walters, they came across a bullet that was lying in the grass, and it was amongst blood and brain matter and skull. Sorry to be so descriptive, but that's what they did see. There were photos taken of this. At that point, Buddy Walters had told several people about this, including Roger Craig, that, told them that while they were saying, there are photos of this. This man dressed all in black came into the scene, identified himself as FBI, walked over to the bullet, bent over, picked up the bullet and put it in his pocket and walked away. So that's another bullet. So we're probably up to about five bullets at this point. And then right around that time, while they were still investigating that area for where bullets had struck, Roger Craig heard what he described as a shrill whistle, and it was coming from the direction of the side of the Texas School Book Depository. He looked up and he saw a man driving a light green Nash Rambler station wagon with a luggage rack on top of it, who had pulled over to the side of Elm Street and opened the passenger door. And at that point, Roger Craig saw a man run down from the school book depository, down the grassy embankment, and get into the car, into the Rambler station wagon, and then the two men sped away. Roger Craig tried to get across the street, but he couldn't because he wanted to get the plate and he wanted to stop this car because he thought it was very suspicious that these were the only two men leaving the scene. Everybody else was coming to the scene, and these people were leaving the scene. And
Steve, if you don't mind, I want to name maybe the next major events that Roger saw and experienced, just to get us to more of the aftermath of his life and the unfolding of it. I think from this point, he then got up to the sixth floor.
Yes.
And he witnessed the rifle being found, and maybe even saw that it was a German Mauser, or he heard someone say it was a German Mauser, right?
Yes, when he went into the sixth floor, he was right behind Luke Mooney, who is credited with finding the sniper's nest.
I just want to make a bullet point of that, no pun intended, that it was a German Mauser.
The next day,
the news tells us it was an Italian Mannlicher Carcano. So, boom, he sees with a different caliber size, a German Mauser rifle is the one that's found. Then he gets a call to come to the police department because someone, I think the man he described running down into the station wagon, they thought that he was there. He ends up seeing Lee Harvey Oswald in the police department, and he recognizes him as the man running down the grass into the Rambler and getting away, unlike the official story that says Oswald acted alone and he got on a bus and took a cab to leave the scene. That's broad strokes what happened to him that day, to Roger?
Yes. Yeah, he did identify a Mauser on the sixth floor, and it was also identified by weapons experts that pulled the rifle out from boxes, and they all identified it as a Mauser, a 7.65 Mauser. Now, see, the Oswald rifle was a .65, completely different caliber.
Steve, please take us to the major leapfrogging stepping stones that thereafter, he hears what did Roger think or do or say a year later when the Warren Commission comes out with a completely different story? What dynamic tension problem did that create for him on the job as he was freely talking to people who asked, what did you see and hear that day? Until finally he was warned by his superiors and lost his job. Can you flesh that out in just a few minutes, because there's so much of his story I want to try to have us fit into the show today.
He was told by his superior, Sheriff Bill Decker. Bill Decker told everybody to keep their mouths shut, do not talk to the media, and just keep quiet. Roger Craig, he didn't, because he was, you know, the media was all over and they were running up to officers and, you know, interviewing them. And Roger Craig told them what they saw. See, at the time when he saw who was eventually who he identified as Lee Harvey Oswald running from the school book depository and fleeing with another man in a Nash Rambler station wagon, they didn't know who that was at that time. He just gave a description. He made the report. And then Captain Will Fritz, the homicide captain at Dallas Police, he called him over. He said, listen, I heard that you identified somebody. And Roger Craig, he says, that sounds like our suspect. Why don't you come take a look at him? He saw, he went over there, saw Oswald being interrogated. Fritz asked him about the car. He asked him what, you know, this officer, Craig, saw you leave in a car. And Oswald said, I told you that station wagon belonged to Mrs. Payne. Now, if you know people that don't know the story, Ruth Payne had taken in.
Steve, I want to just pick up if what I've reviewed with you is true. I want to take it to year after year after year, the chronology of what it cost, what happened to Roger, what it cost him, and how he was harassed.
When the Warren Commission report came out and he read it, he got a hold of the volumes and he saw it. Because in his manuscript, When They Kill a President, he talks about when he's being interviewed by the Warren Commission, and during points of the interview, they were stopping the recording. They would, the tape recorder, they would stop it when he was like talking about very important information. Roger Craig was a key witness in their report, but they changed it. When he read his testimony, they had changed it. And I think he said up to 14 times they had changed the, a little bit here, a little bit there to kind of match their narrative and basically to discredit Roger Craig. But the thing about what Roger Craig witnessed, several other people witnessed similar things, seeing somebody look just like Oswald running from the school book depository and fleeing with another man. That's conspiracy. That's all it takes is two people. And so it just destroyed the official narrative of the Warren Commission. And at that point, Roger Craig became, he started pairing up with people like Jim Garrison, because Jim Garrison had heard about what Roger Craig had witnessed and other people, and he wanted to interview Roger Craig. But Bill Decker said, listen, do not talk to anybody. And then Decker got wind that somebody was talking to Garrison's office from his sheriff's office, and he called Roger Craig into his office and fired him. But even though mm-hmm. that Roger Craig hadn't spoken to Jim Garrison in person, he had talked to some of Garrison's staff, and they were trying to get Craig to come to New Orleans to for a deposition. After he was fired,
so he got fired like 67, 68 when Garrison was doing his investigation.
Yes. Okay. And so he's like, okay, I don't have anything else to lose. I'll go see Garrison and, you know, give him my deposition. Does it, comes back to Dallas. He's not there more than a couple of days. And he walks outside of a diner and somebody took a shot at him. And the bullet grazed the side of his head. And for my book, The Deputy Interviews, I interviewed people that knew Roger Craig, family members, and I spoke to his son. And his son was there when his dad came home from that. His son actually went to New Orleans with his dad for the during the deposition. And when they came back, his dad, the first attempt on his life. Now, this man had several attempts. I believe his son, the way his son put it, was that they tried to kill him five times and the fifth one got him. And that would have been the incident in 1975.
Right. So between 67, 68, 69, when the first attempt happened, they tried to kill him five times and they got him on the last one in 1975.
Yes, there was an incident where he turned his engine over and his car blew up. He lived. He was injured. There was another time where he was driven off the road in the Davis Mountains and his car flipped over end over end. He was in the hospital for a year recuperating from that. Another time he had opened his hotel door and somebody took a shot at him with a shotgun and hit him in the shoulder. Yeah, approximately five times they tried to kill this man. Now, the way the investigations worked with the Warren Commission beginning their investigation in 1964.
Steve.
And then going to...
Steve, hold that thought right there. We got to go to a break right now, and we're going to come and pick it up right there. This is TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather
with reality and perspective.
Everybody is up in arms over the big balloon that's over the United States. How did it get there? All right, it appears to be of Chinese origin, and it appears to be drifting southeast across the United States. And it got me to thinking, this thing is way up in the stratosphere. It's a balloon. How the heck do you steer it? Maybe someone knows how to steer it, but I was looking at it going, maybe it just floated with the upper air winds. And taking a look at the upper air flow over the last 5 to 7 days, anything that originated in China would have come northeastward over Alaska, then turned southeastward over Canada, and is now over the United States. So we'll see. Maybe that actually happened. And if so, then you could say that the TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog diffused a global situation. Can't be as bad as global warming, or maybe it could be. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you got.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The 9/11 terrorist attacks shocked the world and led to the so-called War on Terror. But there's another side to 9/11, which the mainstream media won't cover. For several years, more than 3,000 qualified professionals, at architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, have demanded a proper investigation into 9/11. A genuine investigation into 9/11 would consider evidence that the World Trade Center towers were rigged for controlled demolitions. This includes the third building that collapsed on that fateful day, Building 7, the 47-story skyscraper, which dropped in under 7 seconds, yet no plane crashed into it. This is particularly troubling, as Building 7 was probably one of the most secure buildings in the USA, with the US Secret Service, Department of Defense, and CIA among its tenants. Who would have access to rig a controlled demolition? TNT Radio will cover this story to find the actual perpetrators of the 9/11 attacks.
This is World Stage with Brewster Torres on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
My guest with us is Steve Cameron. We're talking about Roger Dean Craig, the Dallas deputy sheriff who witnessed President Kennedy's assassination and was fired from the force, and attempts were made on his life thereafter to shut him up, because what he saw makes the official story the obvious baloney that it is. And Steve, we were talking about the toll it took on Roger's life, and I'm most intrigued because I read one of the books that you published in Roger's words, and was just struck by this, the calm strength that the man had, knowing that telling the truth caused him immense financial hardships in addition to dangerous attempts on his life, also putting his family in danger. And how would you describe your feeling about what happened to Roger?
It's just it's a very, very sad story about the way his life did end. And I wish that he would have been able to give his testimony. He was actually getting ready to give testimony to the House Select Committee on Assassinations and leading up to his death. And I believe that that's one of the reasons why he was taken out at that time. Many hundreds of well over 100 witnesses or people that had information on that case were met very very untimely deaths, I'll just say it that way. And what we're experiencing now in today's environment with cancel culture, I can imagine that's similar to what was happening to Roger Craig. And every time he would get a job or somewhere, somebody would call one of his employers and try to get him fired, or you know, make up stories about him to, you know. And So it was very rough on not only Roger Craig, but also his family. The conversations that I've had with his son, he told me of an incident when he came over to his dad's house and to show him his dad's dad's new grandchild, and his dad said, "Get out of here! Don't ever come back here." And at the time, his son didn't really understand what was going on, but now as the years have gone by, he believes that his dad was trying to protect him, and his dad didn't want his family to be in danger.
Unbelievable. You're fearlessly posting about COVID and the injections these days, and unless you've got top of the mind more about Roger and the Kennedy assassination, do you want to, I'd love to explore with you what you know, where you rely on information to about what's going on with COVID, and the most important things that you've discovered and continue to discover that you feel people should know about that. Is that a good pivot, or should we continue examining?
Okay. I tell you, Bruce, I mean, I knew things were bad. I knew our history is, basically largely fiction. I never thought it could get as bad as it did in 2020 and what's happened. And I just made a decision in 2020. I was looking at the evidence and it just did not stack up to what they were telling us. And I was trying to be as vocal as I see. I don't know. I guess I was naive and I thought that maybe, most people believe things the way or saw the world the way that I saw them, but that wasn't the case, So I got called every name in the book, lost a lot of friends along the way, even people in my family. You can't have conversations with them about these topics. But now here in 2023, it's all coming. It's just all coming true. What things that we were saying years ago that are just it's terrible with people in my personal life that I know that have suffered consequences from rolling up their sleeves for an experimental injection. And the way it was just fast-tracked, and I have my own thoughts on that and why that is happening. I can share that with you, but there might be people out in the audience that are listening that they may not be aware of some of the things that myself and people like yourself have investigated. And it is just
I encourage you to, because TNT Radio is a free speech platform that is focusing on COVID, among many other, you know, most important stories. So this is a no holds barred environment. Thank God, you know.
Well, I was, you know, I had the fortunately, I was investigating not only the Kennedy assassination and things like 9/11 and all these other things that involved government corruption. So I was kind of awake to these things. And I know that there was, you know, there's always an agenda, whether it's, you know, problem, reaction, solution. That's how I saw COVID and the whole thing. At the time, I believed that this was just a part of a depopulation agenda that the powers that shouldn't be have been pushing since the 1950s, 60s. Through the Club of Rome, and now with the World Unhealth Organization over there, they're acting as a de facto government. And I hope that somehow, some way, the United States can part company with them and, you know, start taking care of our own problems here in the United States, and realize that everything that the World Health Organization has done regarding COVID has been wrong. I just saw something recently. I believe it's Thailand is talking about nullifying their contract with Pfizer. Pfizer is under extreme scrutiny right now. Project thinking about nullifying their contract with Pfizer. Pfizer is under extreme scrutiny right now. Project Veritas released information within the last week of one of their top executives talking about how they are. He didn't go as far as saying that they're doing gain of function research. He called it directed evolution, I believe, or something of that nature, that they're creating viruses to later create a vaccine for. Those are his words. Those aren't mine. But yeah, that's very interesting. And he also was talking about women's fertility. There's fertility issues with women's menstrual cycles. And, you know, that's just the light stuff. You know, that's that we're having people, you know, falling over dead, you know, as soon, you know, within a day of getting these injections, some of them. I mean, that's not the norm, but there are a lot of people that have died from this. It's being covered up. There was a Robinson poll recently, I believe it was the end of December, early January, came out, where 1 in 4 Americans believe that the injections killed somebody that they know. Okay. Mm-hmm. And would be what, like 78 million Americans know somebody that was killed by this thing? Or they believed that it was. So yeah, so people, I believe, are waking up. Unfortunately, they're waking up because it's affecting them directly now. It's affecting their relationships, people that they love. It's affecting, you know, their livelihoods. It was completely.
Do you know or follow the work of Naomi Wolf at dailycloud.io?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah, she's great.
I mention it frequently for folks to go to. Also Steve Kirsch's outfit, vaxsafety.org, the Vaccine Safety Research Foundation, I believe also has resources for folks who think they may have been injured by the injections. Just for folks to go to Naomi's site, dailycloud.io, and look for the Pfizer analysis. She assembled volunteers, multiple thousand volunteers, 2,000 or 3,000, I believe, experts who were able to translate the Pfizer documents that were force released by court order about how Pfizer prepared their injection and the results that they got. And she considers it nothing less than a crime against humanity. The attack, the assault on our health, is particularly to women, particularly to their reproductive capabilities. So, you know, people don't just have to believe you and me, Steve. They can, you know, do the research and see for themselves and make of it what they would, because of what that implies in terms of, I believe, unfortunately, we haven't seen anything yet. And we have to tell ourselves as adults, I believe, we must be rock solid, calm, and strong to help people deal with the grief of discovering this, let alone succumbing to the harm, because the way that it's trending and the numbers that got one or more of the shots maybe it's all benign and maybe the worst wreckage is done, but maybe not. Maybe we haven't seen anything yet in terms of the harm and the injury. And it is the most important story happening on the planet among very big stories like the war in Ukraine and our economic controlled demolition of the economies of the West. Do you see all that kind of happening?
Yeah, it's this thing with the egg shortage. You know, it's so many things are going on. I wouldn't put it past these people. I came across a study saying that chicken egg yolks, now this was published in 2020, that the chicken egg yolks actually block the binding of multiple SARS-CoV-2 spike protein variants to human ACE2 receptors. So maybe there's something to that. Maybe that's why we're seeing an egg shortage right now. I don't know. It's very peculiar. Also, the mRNA injections that they're pushing heavily, and they're trying to make every form of vaccination an mRNA injection. It really isn't a vaccine. They changed the definition to fit that. But egg-based vaccines are going to be a lot more expensive. Now, normal like flu shots, those are grown in eggs to create antibodies. And it's going to give the people selling the mRNA injections, the people buying them, a much cheaper alternative, I would imagine, since the price of eggs are now skyrocketing.
And, you know, people have to. I've just seen so much indicating how corrupt so much of official reality is that. You mentioned the flu vaccine, and the alarm goes off in my head. What the reports I've seen, the studies I've seen, that for decades, the dirty secret about the flu vaccine is that it doesn't prevent anyone from getting the flu. And there are actually some studies, a couple studies, that indicate you're more likely to get the flu if you get the annual flu vaccine. So this is the result of decades of, let's use Americans, just trusting their leadership. We had a process and a system that produced, hopefully, as non-corrupted politicians and people in power as corrupted. And the assassination of President Kennedy was a turning point and a tipping point where the corrupt forces, this is my conclusion after years of reading history, after his assassination, the corrupt forces corrupted more and more people until now, like Jimmy Dore has been yelling on many, many podcasts this week to his great credit, we don't have regular political corruption in America. Our institutions are 100% corrupt. And before anybody freaks out and feels completely hopeless or think that that's doom and gloom, I challenge adults to look at it as your opportunity to participate in a thrilling adventure. You don't need Netflix. You don't need Marvel movies. You're in a thrilling adventure that requires you to learn reality. That is your duty as a human being on this planet. And Steve, what are you working on that you want to talk about? What's the one or two main things you'd like people to steer to find your work and follow you? Because we have a few minutes left and I want to be able to explore your stuff. What do you want to tell us?
Well, thanks. Yeah, right now I'm working with a team that we are going to revolutionize the way that the public is going to be able to investigate what happened in Dealey Plaza on November 22nd, 1963. It's a game changer, project that I'm working on right now. I live in Los Angeles and I'm working with the filmmakers and some very, very smart people that work in tech. And this should be ready hopefully within the next couple of months, and I'll be happy to share more with you at that time once we're ready to release it. It's through an app actually right now. It's called Crime Door. Anybody, if you want to download that app, it's free. You can go to your app store and download Crime Door for free, and you can learn a little bit more about it there. I'm still investigating the JFK assassination. In my own free time, I find something almost every day when I dig into the events. But for now, the story of Roger Craig, I've pretty much put it all out there. And I think I may release maybe a second edition to my book, The Deputy Interviews, that can be found on Amazon if anybody is interested in learning more about Roger Craig. There's a lot more that we didn't cover about his story. And if anybody wants to learn more about Roger Craig, they can just go to Amazon and type in The Deputy Interviews. They can also go to my website, stevecammerproductions.com, and the books are available there too if they would like to purchase them directly through me.
And I recommend people follow you on Facebook, because you hit sledgehammer blows with such vigor and almost zeal and joy that it just fires me up, Steve.
Well, thank you, Bruce. Thank you.
Yeah, I thank you for spending this time with us, for caring about the truth. It's a selfless work. It's not a path to fame or fortune, and yet, God bless you. You're compelled to do it with your moral courage. This is Bruce DeTorres. This is World Stage on the fantastic TNT Radio.